because of the clarity of the chain of command in Myanmar that we have recommended the investigation and prosecution of these six.
A call for Myanmar's senior leaders to be investigated of genocide. It's Tuesday, August 28th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a shift in Australian politics, a Chinese national kidnapped in the United States, new developments in the fight against AIDS, crazy rich Asians, at the movies that is. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A UN fact-finding mission is calling for Myanmar's senior leaders to be referred to the International Criminal Court to be investigated and prosecuted for genocide against the Rohingya Muslim minority in northern Rakhine State and crimes against humanity and war crimes in Kachin and Chan states. From Geneva, Lisa Schlein has more for VOA on the UN report.
This 400-page groundbreaking report goes into detail about the scope and viciousness of the atrocities it says were committed by Myanmar's high command against the country's ethnic minorities. The report accuses the generals of perpetrating what it calls the gravest crimes under international law. The three-member independent international fact-finding mission on Myanmar says the genocidal crimes, which forced the mass exodus of more than 700,000 Rohingya refugees into Bangladesh 1 year ago, were planned years in advance. In an unprecedented move, the UN mission has named the six top generals it says bear the main responsibility for planning and executing these crimes. Investigator Christopher Sidotti says the mission has gathered sufficient evidence of the elements of the crime of genocide to recommend they be investigated and prosecuted before an international tribunal.
In Myanmar, there is a very clear chain of command, and there is no doubt in our minds whatsoever that what we saw happen in Rakhine as a whole would not have happened without it firstly being within the knowledge of the senior military leadership and secondly under their effective control. And it's because of the clarity of the chain of command in Myanmar that we have recommended the investigation and prosecution of these six.
The report finds the civilian authorities have little power to control the actions of the military. However, it blames them for enabling these crimes by ignoring the atrocities being committed. It also criticizes Aung San Suu Kyi, the human rights activist turned politician, as head of the government for not using her moral authority to prevent the events unfolding in Rakhine State. The government refused to grant the mission access to majority Buddhist Myanmar. So the mission gathered evidence from the testimony of 875 victims and eyewitnesses, satellite imagery, documents, photographs, and videos. The mission sent an advance copy of its report to the Myanmar government. So far, there has been no response. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. UN special panel accuses Myanmar of genocidal intent in 2017 Rohingya crackdown. First asylum seekers reach Australia since 2014. Bargaining chip or not, Taiwan keeps improving prized relations with United States. New Prime Minister Morrison tours Australia's drought-stricken outback. Trade technology rift may have economic and political impact on China. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Now with the United Nations investigative panel accusing Myanmar's military of carrying out numerous atrocities during last year's crackdown against the Rohingya Muslims, we wanted to get a closer look at what the people of Myanmar think about the situation. Tharapith Ann, assistant professor of Burmese at Northern Illinois University, has recently returned from her native Myanmar. VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked her about what she feels is a lack of determination among world powers to do much about the Rohingya situation.
There have been a lot of talks, for sure. But in terms of actions, I would say that there is a lack of coordinated actions from the government levels to even individual and the civil society levels.
Why do you think that is?
After the 2011 handover to the civilian government, and especially after 2015 elections when Aung San Suu Kyi-led government came to power, the world has been really hopeful and really want Myanmar to succeed as a new democratic nation in the world. So this 2017 August incidents, or the series of events that lead to mass exodus of Rohingyas from the country, is really a black mark or a stain, not just for the country or Myanmar itself, but also for the whole world or the countries that really help and sometimes push Myanmar for the parts of democracy.
Do you fault Aung San Suu Kyi for failing to take enough action against what has happened here? Why has she not done more? She's a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
That's right, yeah. Well, the official NLD claim is that they are not in control. So, and then to some extent, that is correct, because, for example, Ministry of Home Affairs and also the army, who committed the atrocities, they were not under direct control of the government. But this doesn't leave NLD and Aung San Suu Kyi off the hook, because Aung San Suu Kyi still holds a tremendous moral authority over the entire country. And just by keeping quiet and sometimes even becoming very defensive about the case, sends very worrying messages to the entire country and her followers that this situation is not as bad as what the rest of the world think, or there hasn't been as many atrocities or deaths committed against this minority. Because if she starts doing that, she will certainly alienate her followers, and she will lose a lot of the followers.
So you're blaming politics on this then, right?
Definitely.
What is the feeling of the majority of people who live in Myanmar about this situation?
It is very strange. I just came back a few weeks ago. I have a sense that the whole country has been living in denial. So such mass exodus of people took place just a year ago. And the whole world has been talking about it for a year now. It was rare to see Myanmar on the front page of major newspapers and hearing as the first news item on radio and television. It is rare for audiences in America and elsewhere. But inside the country, there is not much conversation or discourse about this, at least in public. What most people like to believe is that this is a defense against the invading Muslim extremists, and some of the communities get caught between these, the conflicts between the army and the extremists.
Do you think that the Rohingya, or at least any kind of relatively large percentage of the exiled Rohingya population, will ever be resettled in Myanmar?
It depends on a lot of factors. A lot of countries focus on the top-down solutions, right? So asking the government to expedite the repatriation process, etc. But it also depends on the local communities living in Rakhine State. Unless those two communities could forge their social cohesion back together and have the mutual understandings and the respect for each other, unless we cannot guarantee them, it will be really difficult for those Rohingya communities to come back, mostly for their safety.
Thara P. Than, Assistant Professor of Burmese at Northern Illinois University, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Happening now in Asia, a boat carrying asylum seekers from Vietnam has arrived in Australia, the first such landing in 4 years. Authorities say the vessel landed on Queensland, where Police Minister Mark Ryan says about 15 of the asylum seekers have been discovered and detained since the landing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Glad as always to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Scott Morrison, Australia's new Prime Minister, is promising to heal the wounds after his predecessor, Malcolm Turnbull, was forced out by party rivals. In an internal party room ballot, Morrison narrowly defeated the former Home Affairs Minister, Peter Dutton, by a vote of 45-40. Phil Mercer updates us from Sydney.
Scott Morrison and his deputy have presented themselves as the new generation that can put a bruised and battered government back together. They've promised to focus on the drought that's gripped much of eastern Australia, but as they try to get back to business, huge divisions remain in the centre-right coalition. Malcolm Turnbull's term was ended Friday by a revolt by Conservative MPs, led by the former Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton. Turnbull had been weakened by poor polling and by concerted attacks by right-wing factions, who considered him to be too much of a moderate. In his last press conference as leader, he said it had been a shameful week for politics.
Australians will be just dumbstruck and so appalled by the conduct of the last week. You know, disunity is death in Australian politics, as everyone says.
The new Prime Minister's task is to heal a fractured and chaotic coalition government in time for the next election. That won't be easy, said Paul Kelly, an editor at the Australian newspaper.
This is a government that's broken. This, I believe, is the most profound crisis the Liberal Party's faced since Sir Robert Menzies formed the party in the 1940s. I think this is a much more serious split in a governing party than what we saw in the former Labor government with Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard.
It's been more than 10 years since a sitting Australian Prime Minister has served a full three-year term in office. Morrison is the country's 30th leader. He is socially conservative and, as a former immigration minister, helped to shape policies that saw asylum seekers who tried to reach Australia by sea either turned away or sent to migrant camps in the South Pacific. While he could be persuaded to cut legal immigration as the election nears, analysts don't expect him to adopt any new radical policies on issues such as climate change. Some members of his government are heavily influenced by the powerful mining industry. Election analyst William Bowe believes Morrison will find it tough to win over voters.
The Liberal Party have less chance of winning the election now than they did 2 weeks ago. I think, however, that Scott Morrison is a far more electorally palatable choice than what seemed in prospect, which was Peter Dutton. The Liberal Party are in a position now where they can be competitive, and I think that this whole saga could have ended up a lot worse for them.
Commentators say it's been one of the most destructive periods of party infighting in recent Australian political history. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, a brash kidnapping on American soil. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, Myanmar's powerful military chief is among 20 individuals and organizations that Facebook says it is banning from its site in order to prevent the spread of hate and misinformation. The action comes after the social media giant was criticized for being used to inflame ethnic and religious conflict in the country, especially against Rohingya Muslims. More is on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, U.S. law enforcement agencies led by the Federal Bureau of Investigation are searching for a 28-year-old Chinese national, identified as Ruchen Tony Liao, who has been missing since July 16th, a victim of an abduction possibly by men who knew him. Liao was last seen emerging from a business meeting in the city of San Gabriel, California, east of Los Angeles. His Chinese family is desperate to gain information leading to the safe return of their son. Malcolm Lombard, an attorney representing the family, spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty.
He went to a business meeting in the San Gabriel Valley. He expected to conduct some business, and he never came back.
He's a car dealer, isn't he?
He is a car dealer. He deals in high-end luxury cars on a consignment basis and on the second-hand of the used cars, of high-end luxury cars.
What can you tell me about the actual abduction? I believe there were three men involved?
Correct. One man who's the person who presented a sketch of is, his name is David. The other two, we don't have any idea. If they can find this individual named David, they will find Tony.
There's a relationship there?
Yes. David was at the business meeting.
And the family has offered a $150,000 reward?
Correct. They've offered up to $150,000 reward to safe return the whereabouts of their son.
And the suspects have demanded a ransom.
That is correct. $2 million.
Do we know any more in the case than what's already been revealed right now? Is the investigation making progress?
After today's news conference, there have been tips coming in from the public, but we're certainly seeking more tips and more information and more inquiry from the public will be helpful.
Matthew, can you tell me about Tony? He was educated here in the U.S. He's a U.S. citizen?
He's not a U.S. citizen. He was educated here. He went to school in Nebraska. And he's lived here in Southern California for about 4 or 5 years. He loves cars. That's really his main passion. He loves being around them. He loves selling cars. He loves helping people obtain the car of their dreams. Everything about cars he loves.
Is his family also in California?
No, they're not. They are in China. They're terrified. They're distraught. Tony really has no family here in the U.S., and he is just here by his friends. His friends who are here in Southern California, the family is scared as well as devastated. He's their only son.
The kidnappers are believed to be all Chinese. The FBI, which has released a sketch of one of the suspects named David, does not believe Liao and his kidnappers have left the United States and is offering a $25,000 reward for information leading to his recovery. His kidnappers have not been heard from for about a month, and investigators believe Liao may have been the victim of a business deal gone bad. This news from VOA Asia. Australia's new prime minister visited the drought-stricken outback in a demonstration that he had turned his focus away from his government's internal drama to the problems of the nation. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says drought assistance is a top priority, along with national security and economic growth. Grow your news awareness at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, experts are warning of the resurgence of AIDS unless governments and communities remain focused and committed to ending the epidemic. Despite recent advances in treatment, AIDS experts say the deadly virus continues to spread and still poses a serious threat, especially in hard-to-reach communities that are at greatest risk. VOA's Carol Pearson reports.
The face of AIDS has changed over the past 3 decades. It's now impossible to tell who has the disease and who doesn't. Treatment has come a long way, allowing people infected with what was once a death sentence to live normal, productive lives. Even those at risk of getting the virus can now take medication called PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, to stay HIV-free. Dr. Chris Byrer says it's just the latest weapon in the growing medical arsenal against AIDS.
It's the most powerful new tool in prevention we've had in a generation of research. And what we're seeing is that if you combine treatment, so people living with the virus getting treated, and then people at risk having access to PrEP, you really can get control of HIV epidemic.
Yet AIDS claimed the lives of nearly 1 million people last year. And experts predict 100 million people will have been infected with the HIV virus by 2030. The reasons: complacency, reduced funding for AIDS research and treatment, and the difficulty of reaching people at risk. The health agency found the highest number of untreated AIDS infections among the poor and in the Black and Hispanic communities. The agency says closing these treatment gaps is critical to ending AIDS in the U.S. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
No doubt by now you've heard of John Chu's romantic comedy, Crazy Rich Asians, which showcases lavish sets and beautiful people. Set against the exotic and ultra-modern backdrop of Singapore, the film rewards its audience with an uplifting modern-day fairy tale. But what makes this Hollywood film stand out is its all-Asian cast. VOA's Penelope Palou looks at the movie's box office success and the significance the success has on the Asian community.
March. We've been dating for over a year now, and I think it's about time people met my beautiful girlfriend. What about us taking an adventure east?
Like Queens?
Singapore. Colin's wedding. Don't you want to be my family?
As the young couple sets out for Singapore, what Rachel, an NYU economics professor, does not know is that Nick Young, played by Henry Golding, is the scion of one of the city-state's wealthiest families and one of its most eligible bachelors. Before she even gets there, her picture has gone viral on social media, and as soon as she arrives, she becomes the target of many wealthy young women who aspire to marry Nick. Nick's formidable mother, Eleanor Young, played by Michelle Yeoh, feels that American-born Rachel, played by Constance Wu, is not suitable for her son. She rejects the young woman's American values of independence and self-determination as an affront to Singapore's traditionalist values.
That's a beautiful ring.
Nick's father had it made when he proposed to me.
Last year they met at Cambridge. They're both studying law together.
Oh, I didn't know you were a lawyer.
I withdrew from university when we got married. I chose to help my husband run a business and to raise a family. For me, it was a privilege. But for you, you may think it's old-fashioned.
Rachel's and Nick's relationship unfolds against the sophisticated backdrop of the Asian islands' exotic landscapes and mouth-watering culinary creations. The cast features funny, quirky, and serious characters, all of them impeccably dressed, impossibly rich, and all of them Asian.
And I love the fact that we have Asians from Australia, from England, from Costa Rica, from America, from Singapore, from Malaysia. We have Asians from all over.
Constance Wu says the film moves away from the cliched image of the Asian as a disenfranchised minority in the U.S.
So frequently, Hollywood thinks that Asians are this one monolith. Like, there isn't a difference between Asian Asians and Asian Americans, or British Asians or Australian Asians. And there's a difference.
The film's message and its lavish cinematography have paid off. The film has become a box office hit, elevating the hopes of cast and fans that Asian actors are finally becoming part of Hollywood's mainstream. Victoria Loke, who plays wealthy socialite Fiona Chang, spoke to us via Skype from Singapore about the film's success.
During filming, we never really thought about how big an impact this was going to make. So many Asian American audiences have, you know, messaged us separately as actors, our director, our producers, thanking us for having a stake and being a part of this representation of the Asian American community.
Despite the film's box office success, Loke says there has also been criticism.
It's about a very small niche, and of course, you know, there will be a lot of fair criticism about the fact that it doesn't represent fully the entire population.
Representative or not, the film has been playing out to sold-out theaters in Asia and the U.S., and Victoria Loke has just confirmed it has been green-lighted for a sequel. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on great radio stations around Asia, like Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. Thanks to everyone there who tuned in today, and we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at VOA Asia at voanews.com. Our director for today's program is Tracy Carter, our engineer Keith Holmes, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. We thank them all. I'm your host, Jim Stevenson. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow and have a great day.